when you were here.
All right.
Let's go around, say names, starting with Domio.
And then I guess let's do the outer row and then we'll do the people inside. Domio.
Pat.
Pat.
Myeongju.
Myeongju.
Bruce.
Bruce.
Rick.
Rick.
Amelia.
Amelia.
Linda.
Linda.
Suzanne.
Suzanne.
Frankie.
Frankie.
James.
James.
Michelle.
Sophia.
Sophia.
James.
James.
Chuck.
Chuck.
Mark.
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 John.
John.
Diane.
Diane.
Jim.
Jim.
Amanda.
Amanda.
Robin.
Robin.
Bob.
Bob.
So in terms of announcements, next Saturday, the 13th, is our summer potluck at 6 o'clock at my house, and there's information on the newsletter. So I hope everybody gets the newsletter. If they don't, put your name on the guest book, right? Yeah, John, I couldn't understand your email address, so I sent one. I sent the newsletter.
I got one.
So yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, but that's on Saturday. Bring a vegetarian dish to share, or a beverage or dessert. Hope to see you guys right there.
Thank you.
And next Sunday, we have a guest speaker, Rinzan, who is the teacher at No Rank Center. He's been here before and he's a really good speaker, so that would be nice. And then the 20th is the book group, and that Saturday is the book group, and then Dharma Talk by Shin Tai on the 21st. So, yeah.
And Shin Tai would probably be here today, but she is at the farm retreat at Sato's.
Oh, she is?
Empty Field Zendo outside of Eugene. And Richard's there too.
Shoketsu's there too, right?
No. And she decided not to go because of her toe. So.
And I just wanted to mention that some of us get together for lunch after this at Market of Choice. And the way that's set up is you just cruise for whatever you want. They have different food vending places. And then you pay at the cashier, and we usually meet upstairs. So if you are available and inclined, please join us.
All right. And also, we are going to be starting a new series on Tuesdays. I'm going to be focusing on this book, Active Hope, How to Face the Mess We're In Without Going Crazy, by Joanna Macy and Chris Johnstone. And I'll be working the way through the book. It's not an explicitly Buddhist book, but you'll definitely see that. I mean, Joanna Macy's a Buddhist, and it's inspired by and very compatible with Buddhism. And what I will be doing is we won't be reading it out loud, but I will present the core messages of a chapter, and also bring some kind of topic. We will tie the chapter to Buddhism in some way, some Buddhist teaching or practice, put it into some perspective. And we have 2 copies of this book left for sale back there for $12. You can also get it online. I was kind of disappointed to find out it wasn't on the shelf at Powell's. But I might still be able to order it through them. And I just think this book is amazing, because her point about active hope is not something that arises because of external circumstances. It's not optimism about how likely you think of something is going to come about. It's deciding this is what I want to see happen, and then and focusing on that intention, and then that is what matters. So in a way, it's like, well, I don't know if we're going to be able to avoid human extinction. I don't know if we are ever going to be able to live in harmony with nature. But that's what I want to have happen, and I am going to do everything that I can for that. So there's a kind of, it's a shifting the emphasis from out there to in here. And then that's something kind of, no matter what we're facing, that's, you know, actually can be energizing and positive. And she actually portrays this as kind of like a wonderful opportunity, which I tend to think as well to some extent that, you know, I've spent my whole life just wondering, like, what the hell is going on? Like, how can we just be treating the planet and treating people this way? This is not headed in a good direction. And I'm almost 50, so I've been watching this and just being like, what? But it's like, I don't know, I guess it hadn't gotten bad enough for people to kind of wake up and be willing to do something. And we may be getting to that point. We may be like getting to the point where we all realize, like, hey, something has to change. And now what do we do? So, I mean, that there's a potential for wonderful things to come out of all of this.
I really just can't stand to try and come here on weeknights because of the commute I have. But I got the book on Kindle, and so I just wanted to mention that I thought the way I could participate is through the recordings. So I just wanted to let you know that I was going to be paying attention to the recordings, so it hopefully will be successful.
No pressure, Bob. We will do our best, and I'm also toying with the idea, you know, either this is going to show up in the podcast somehow, probably, okay. And I mean, I even thought, I don't know, I mean, I shouldn't take on another project, but if you wanted to perhaps organize kind of like a book group. Okay. Around it that met on the Zoom video conference might be kind of cool if you just kind of kept pace with what we were doing in the classes, but then, you know, met and talked about it separately.
I really appreciate that because I appreciate the topic and I'm very attracted to it, and I just seem to be allergic to it.
I don't blame you. I'm not blaming you. And this is—it's a very accessible book, so I think it'd be great for a book group as well. That, you know, it's not like you have to know some great profound stuff about Buddhism in order to follow it. All right, on to today's topic, and I will formally begin my Dharma talk in a moment. But we're going to be talking about the Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance by Dogen. Thought it was very appropriate for what's going on in the world. I made 20 copies, so they may make their way around, but they may have to, a couple people may have to share, so. Homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. So, this is a fascicle, or an essay, by Zen Master Dogen, written in 1243. Japanese Zen Master. And the meaning of the title in Japanese, it's Bodhisattva Shishobo. And I guess on the version that I handed out to you, it's not on there, but Bodhisattva is a being who vows to save the, you know, become awakened, but really in order to save themselves and all beings. She means for, sho means embracing, unifying, or integrating, and bo means way or method. So obviously, you know, translation, there's many different translations of this because it's such a short and sweet Dogen essay. And so there's many different, like the Bodhisattva's four methods of guidance. Shohaku Okamura calls it the Bodhisattva's four embracing actions. And I like to call it the four ways Bodhisattvas embrace living beings. So his formulation of these four things, so the four things, which we will go through it, the four things are giving, or dana, kind speech, or loving words, beneficial action, and it's often translated as identity action, which is very awkward. It's like, what does that mean? It's not an English term. Identity means same, and G, do means same. It's made out of the Japanese term doji. Do means same, G means thing or task. So it's kind of like same task. And it could be translated as identity of purpose, but I like them kind of the more colloquial translation of sharing the same aim. A bodhisattva would share the same aim as living beings, or even, this is even more colloquial, but I kind of like being in the same boat. So then these actions are giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and being in the same boat with living beings. And the beneficial action, Dogen says, it means to skillfully benefit all classes of sentient beings, that is to care about their distant and near future, and to help them by using skillful means. So skillful means is a Buddhist term that means, you know, you don't just decide, this is what I'm going to do to help you. You use wisdom and experimenting and practice to find out what really is going to help. Maybe what I think is going to help isn't going to help. Actually, I might have to get creative. So beneficial action, just to kind of look ahead, is goes beyond just what we usually think of as just kind of compassionate response. If I encounter somebody, you know, struggling, there's a compassionate response, and I'll help you in kind of this immediate moment. This is really like a near and distant future. How can I help you in the most skillful way? So it's a different kind of thing. And Dogen, he didn't make this list of four up. It appears in various Mahayana sutras through the centuries, including the Lotus Sutra, and they're referenced as the four social teachings. And the list can be found all the way back in the Pali Canon, the original Buddhist teachings. So here's a very short little sutta from the Pali Canon that says, there are these four grounds for the bonds of fellowship: giving, kind words, beneficial help, and consistency in the face of events. And that means kind of cooperation with others. In line with what's appropriate, in each case. These bonds of fellowship function in the world like the linchpin in a moving cart. So it's interesting to note that these four social teachings are different than the four Brahma Viharas, the, you know, kind of the state of heart, mind that we try to cultivate toward living beings. So there's metta or goodwill, there's compassion, sympathetic joy, and equanimity. So those are also very important, but they're kind of like, in a way, kind of internal practices. They're ways that we reorient our heart, mind toward beings. And of course it affects how we act toward them. But the social teachings are really about what we do, actually what we do in relationship to other beings. And one note before we just kind of read through this together. The translation that we're reading is from Kaz Ta-Nehisi, and it's the Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance. But it's important to note that, because you might, from that kind of interpretation, think this is about what bodhisattvas do for ordinary beings. So it's kind of like bodhisattvas do this for the sake of others. So, you know, when we're kind of in a one-up position and we have some knowledge or some equanimity or something like that, then we help these ordinary suffering beings, and these are skillful ways to do it, which, you know, it all makes sense. If you know someone who's suffering and you're going to try to help them find their way out of it, definitely, giving, generosity will, you know, make them more receptive, kind words, beneficial action, giving the sense to them that you share the same aim. These are all very wise things to do if you want to get people to do what you're asking them to do. So there are wise methods of guidance if you need to be doing some guiding. But that's kind of a limited way of looking at them. And actually, we'll read this, but in the section on beneficial action, Dogen says, "Foolish people think that if they help others first, their own benefit will be lost. But this is not so. Beneficial action is an act of oneness, benefiting self and others together." So as we go through this, you'll see this is kind of Dogen's whole point throughout, is like turning our ideas of like, I'm going to do something for you, like turning it all upside down, and thinking about this as like this is building relationships, and it's not just about one being doing it for another, and also that this is inseparable from practice. You know, the whole idea is that I have no inherently existing enduring self, and it's not separate from you, and it's not separate from all things. So I can kind of, theoretically, I can sit and I can meditate and study the Dharma and do all these other practices that will help me awaken to that reality. And then this is kind of the way that in original Buddhism this was portrayed, that was like, and then, you know, once you awaken, you're kind. Once you're awakened, you're generous because you're not caught up in self-concern, right? But it didn't say, act with generosity, act with kindness, act with love, and then that's a means to awakening. You get what I'm saying? Like, it was like, that was something you might do after awakening, or it was kind of like a nice side benefit, but it wasn't presented as this in itself. So basically, you can't gain enlightenment just by being nice to people. Which in a sense is true, but the way that Dogen portrays these social actions, you can see them as like these could be and can be practices in and of themselves, that when we really surrender ourselves to these actions, we're challenged in our sense of self. Our sense of separation between self and other is you know, diluted. So anyway, it's not all that long. So let's just read it out loud. I will read it out loud because I'm the one on the mic. And I'm just I'm going to go through it more after we read it all the way through. I'll start back at the beginning and we'll explore it a little more deeply. And I don't actually know how far we'll go today because my podcast this week, we just got through the first two paragraphs because there's a lot here. But as I read, I might just stop very briefly when he refers to a story or a metaphor or something that it's helpful to know. So the Bodhisattva's four methods of guidance are giving, kind speech, beneficial action, and identity action. Giving means non-greed. Non-greed means not to covet. Not to covet means not to curry favor. Even if you govern the four continents, in other words, even if you're like, you rule over the whole world, you have so many resources and influence, you should always convey the authentic path with non-greed. It is like giving away unneeded belongings to someone you don't know. Offering flowers blooming on a distant mountain to the Tathagata, or the Buddha. Or again, offering treasures you had in your former life to sentient beings. Whether it is of teaching or of material, each gift has its value and is worth giving. Even if the gift is not your own, there is no reason to abstain from giving. The question is not whether the gift is valuable, but whether there is genuine merit. When you leave the way to the way, you attain the way. At the time of attaining the way is always left to the way. When treasure is left just as treasure, treasure becomes giving. You give yourself to others and others to others. The power of the causal relations of giving reaches to devas, human beings, and even enlightened sages. When giving becomes actual, such causal relations are immediately formed. And I should pause here to say, Dogen's writing, as much of the Chan and Zen writings, are really, they're really more like poetry than prose. So, you know, as you read it or as you hear it, the best thing to do is just kind of let it wash over you without trying to understand it. Because then you just feel like, wait, the way is to the way, and at the time of obtaining the way is always left to the way, and it's like, ah. So you just kind of let it wash over you, and then kind of like poetry, something will sound kind of cool. You know, something, you'll just resonate with something. You might not even necessarily know what it is, but it just kind of, it evokes something. So the Buddha said, when a person who practices giving goes to an assembly, people take notice. Know that the mind of such a person communicates subtly with others. This being so, give even a phrase or verse of the truth. It will be a wholesome seed for this and other lifetimes. Give your valuables, even a penny or a blade of grass. It will be a wholesome root for this and other lifetimes. The truth can turn into valuables. Valuables can turn into the truth. This is all because the giver is willing. A king gave his beard as medicine to cure his retainer's disease. So this is where he's referring to these old traditional stories. And where a king, his servant, had some disease, and supposedly, in the medicine at the time, grinding up your beard hair was going to help. So he went ahead and shaved so that his servant could be cured. And then a child offered sand to Buddha and became King Ashoka in a later birth. So the Buddha is going around on his alms rounds with his bowl, which, you know, people are meant to come and put food in, but this little kid was inspired, picked up some sand and put it in the Buddha's bowl. And then in a future life, he became a king who was known as like the first Buddhist king of India. They were not greedy for reward, but only shared what they could. To launch a boat or build a bridge is an act of giving. If you study giving closely, you see that to accept a body and to give up the body are both giving. Making a living and producing things can be nothing other than giving. To leave flowers to the wind, to leave birds to the season, are also acts of giving. Great King Ashoka was able to offer enough food for hundreds of monks with half a mirabalan fruit. So there's Ashoka again, and I don't think this is really true, but according to the myth, he wanted to be the biggest donor to the Sangha, the Buddhist monks, ever. And so he was giving away so much that he was breaking the royal treasury, and his grandson, who was the heir to the throne, and the other ministers, they took away Ashoka's access to the royal treasury. So then Ashoka would they send him food on golden plates, and then Ashoka would send the golden plate to the Sangha. So they started sending him food on a clay plate, and then essentially all he had left was half of a mirabalan fruit. So he sent that to the Sangha to be chopped up and put in a soup so it could feed the entire Sangha. And then apparently, he, according to this legend, because it's just fun, at the end of his life, so he sent that to the Sangha, and then he said to his minister, even though he's been deprived of all his power, actually, he says, who is the Lord of the earth or something? And the minister says, you are. So then the Ashoka says, well, except for the royal treasury, I give the Sangha everything else. I give the Sangha, the earth and the oceans and everything. So then the idea was that when Ashoka died, then his kingdom had to buy, or his ministers had to buy the kingdom back from the Sangha. And thereby, then Ashoka became the largest ever donor to the Sangha. There's giving. People who practice giving should understand that King Ashoka thus proved the greatness of giving. Not only should you make an effort to give, but also be mindful of every opportunity to give. You were born into this present life because you originally embodied the merit of giving in the past. The Buddha said, if you are to practice giving to yourself, how much more so to your parents, wife, and children? Thus know that to give to yourself is part of giving. To give to your family is also giving. Even when you give a particle of dust, you should rejoice in your own act, because you authentically transmit the merit of all Buddhas and begin to practice an act of a bodhisattva. The mind of a sentient being is difficult to change. Keep on changing the minds of sentient beings from the moment that you offer one valuable to the moment that they attain the way. This should be initiated by giving. Thus, giving is the first of the six paramitas. Mind is beyond treasure. Things given are beyond measure. And yet in giving, mind transforms the gift, and the gift transforms the mind. Kind speech means that when you see sentient beings, you arouse the heart of compassion and offer words of loving care. It is contrary to cruel or violent speech. In the secular world, there is the custom of asking after someone's health. In the Buddha way, there is the phrase, please treasure yourself, and the respectful address to seniors, may I ask how you are? It is kind speech to speak to sentient beings as you would to a baby. Praise those with virtue, pity those without it. If kind speech is offered, little by little kind speech expands. Thus, even kind speech that is not ordinarily known or seen comes into being. Be willing to practice it for this entire present life. Do not give up world after world, life after life. Kind speech is the basis for reconciling rulers and subduing enemies. Those who hear kind speech from you have a delighted expression and a joyful mind. Those who hear of your kind speech will be deeply touched. They will always remember it. Know that kind speech arises from kind heart, and kind heart from the seed of compassionate heart. Ponder the fact that kind speech is not just praising the merit of others. It has the power to turn the destiny of the nation. Beneficial action is to skillfully benefit all classes of sentient beings, that is, to care about their distant and near future, and to help them by using skillful means. In ancient times, someone helped a caged tortoise. Another took care of a sick sparrow. So once again, these are stories of people who just, they spontaneously cared for these animals, and then the story goes that then they had, in future lives, they had experienced good fortune. They did not expect a reward. They were moved to do so only for the sake of beneficial action. Foolish people think that if they help others first, their own benefit will be lost, but this is not so. Beneficial action is one, an act of oneness, benefiting self and others together. To greet petitioners, a lord of old stopped three times in the middle of his bath to arrange his hair, and three times left his dinner table. So this is a story of a lord. And he, this is a story of what he did. You know, could you imagine, you know, settling into your bath, somebody knocks on the door, get up and dry off and get dressed and go, and then you entertain them for a while. Ah, all right, you get back into your bath. And then you're interrupted three times, and each time you know, cheerfully go and greet the person at the door. He did this solely with the intention of benefiting others. He did not mind instructing even subjects of other lords. Thus benefit friend and enemy equally. Benefit self and others alike. If you have this heart, even beneficial action for the sake of grass, trees, wind, and water is spontaneous and unremitting. This being so, make a wholehearted effort to help the ignorant. Identity action means non-difference. It is non-difference from self, non-difference from others. For example, in the human world, the Tathagata, the Buddha, took the form of a human being. From this we know that he did the same in other realms. When we know identity action, self and others are one. Lute, song, and wine are one with human beings, devas, and human beings, and spirit beings. Human beings are one with lute, song, and wine. So lute, song, and wine, apparently, and I don't really understand this, is they were called friends of the hermit. This is an example, like, I haven't gotten to this section in my in-depth exploration. So here's an example of where, in this kind of poetic teaching, when you first read it, it's like, what? But I find if you sit with it a little bit, and then you take a guess on what on earth he means, and then try to put it into your own words, you usually find that you know more about what Dogen's saying than you realize. Like, maybe you know all of what he's saying, or you can't be sure that's what he's saying, but it's, you know, something appears. So I'm sure that if I sit with this for a while, I will come up with some kind of interpretation. Human beings are one with human beings. Devas are ones with devas. Devas are the, like, gods in the Buddhist cosmology, but they're not an all-powerful god like our, you know, like the monotheistic god. They're just more types of beings in the world. Spirit beings are one with spirit beings. To understand this is to understand identity action. Action means right form, dignity, correct manner. This means that you cause yourself to be in identity with others after causing others to be in identity with you. However, the relationship of self and others varies limitlessly according to circumstances. The Guanji says, the ocean does not exclude water. That is why it is so large. The mountain does not exclude soil. That is why it is high. A wise lord does not exclude people. That is why he has many subjects. That the ocean does not exclude water is identity action. Water does not exclude the ocean either. This being so, water comes together to form the ocean. Soil piles up to form mountains. My understanding is that because the ocean itself does not exclude the ocean, it is the ocean and it is large. Because mountains do not exclude mountains, they are mountains and they are high. Because a wise lord does not weary of people, his people assemble. People means the nation. A wise lord means ruler of the nation. A ruler is not supposed to weary of people. Not to weary of people does not mean to give no reward or punishment. Although a ruler gives reward and punishment, he does not weary of people. In ancient times when people were less complicated, there was neither legal reward nor punishment in the country. The concept of reward and punishment was different. Even at present, there should be some people who seek the way without expecting a reward. This is beyond the understanding of ignorant people. Because a wise lord understands this, he does not weary of people. People form a nation and seek a wise lord, but as they do not completely know the reason why a wise lord is wise, they only hope to be supported by the wise lord. They do not notice that they are the ones who support the wise lord. In this way, the principle of identity action is applied to both a wise lord and all people. This being so, identity action is a vow of bodhisattvas. With a gentle expression, practice identity action for all people. So, don't like to read that much, but I want to give everybody kind of a overview of it. So I think this is a really sweet Dogen fascicle. We can kind of start from the top about non-greed and giving, but I also just open it up for if anybody has any initial thoughts.
Yeah. Can you elaborate on, when you leave the way to the way, you attain the way?
Yes, that's... that is part of the part that I have gone into depth with. So, in Dogen's writing, where it sometimes seems kind of circular, there's one of these in the Genjo Koan as well, like, life is a bird, and a bird is life, and a fish is life, and life is a fish, and like it's kind of like, what a, you know. When there's all that stuff going on, what he's actually doing, and I only know this because I got to like kind of work with somebody who could read Japanese, and we looked at the Japanese and kind of play translating. He has these characters, and he's just, you know, in Chinese, he's just, because there's the characters for a noun and there's the characters for the verb. And he's just rearranging them in the sentence. So then it's like this, what I see it as is this kind of poetic and suggestive way of taking us through like all the different possible relationships between these things. So in this particular sentence, there's you and there's the way. So what are the relationships between you and the way? And then there's the acts of attaining and kind of leaving something to itself, allowing it to be itself. So it's like, do you attain the way? Does the way attain you? Do you attain the way by leaving the way to just be what it is? And yet you attain something when you leave things to be just the way they are. When you leave yourself to be just the way you are, you attain the way in a certain way. So it's like it's taking these attaining and leaving and you and the way and just inviting us to just see the way that, you know, in English, it's all very, which is a good language for explaining causation and the relationships between things. You know, you attain the way, and then the way, you know, like, who's doing what to who in what order? Whereas in Chinese and Japanese, it would be much more, here are the concepts and the verbs, and actually it's through context that you figure out what the relationships are between them. So it's much more fluid. So a lot of times I feel like Dogen is just, which is what he's doing in that first paragraph, he's just trying to kind of blow our minds, I guess. Because, you know, we have this idea of giving, you know, the conventional idea of giving is someone has ownership, you know, someone has control or ownership of something, and then they transfer that control and ownership to somebody else. That's what giving is, right? Maybe space, it may be land, it may be food, it may be something. I'm going to, you know, give this to you. But then Dogen's saying, this is like giving away unneeded belongings. Oh, and also if you think about the, you know, what is the merit in giving? Why is giving a good thing? We usually think there's four reasons. Well, I mean, there might be more, but I thought of four reasons you might give. There's the sacrifice on the part of the giver. You know, it's good for us to make these sacrifices. It's a virtuous thing for us to make this sacrifice. And or there's a benefit to the receiver. So, you know, maybe it's not something that I'm making a huge sacrifice, but it's really going to help you. So there's a benefit to the receiver. Maybe there's accrual of merit to the giver. Or it's building our relationship somehow. You know I'm giving this and, you know, you feel grateful and affectionate for me. So there's these four kind of ways that you could look at giving. Reasons to give, reasons why giving would have merit. But giving away unneeded belongings, there's no sacrifice. To someone you don't know, so there's no building of a relationship, and presumably you don't, I'm kind of reading this as like you continue not to know them. Like, they don't end up, it's not a stranger who then says, oh my gosh, you are so generous. It's just, you know, it's kind of anonymous giving. So there's not a building of a relationship, there's not a accrual of merit or reputation. He says it's like offering flowers blooming on a distant mountain to the Buddha. So they aren't your flowers. They're on a distant mountain. What are they going to do for the Buddha? What does it mean to give these flowers to the Buddha? So there's no like benefit to the Buddha. They're not yours to give. They're not at your, you can't actually, you know, physically give them. Offering treasures you had in your former life to sentient beings. The treasures aren't even here anymore. You don't have them. They don't even exist anymore. So what does it mean to offer them to sentient beings? So in a way, he's like, I mean, the purpose of this isn't to, like, he's not going to really offer us, well, what giving really is. He's just asking us to let go of these ideas that we have about giving. And then as we listen, we're like, What is this? Offering treasures you had in your soul. Whether it is a teaching or of material, each gift has its value and is worth giving. So down toward the end of the second paragraph, so the power of this tongue-twisting, I don't really like this translation. The power of the causal relations of giving reaches to devas, human beings, and even enlightened sages. When giving becomes actual, such causal relations are immediately formed. So I have a different translation that I like better. The karma of giving pervades the heaven above and our human world alike. It even reaches the realm of those sages who have attained the fruits of realization. Whether we give or receive, we connect ourselves with all beings throughout the world. So that's Shohaku Okumura, by the way. So the karma of giving pervades the heavens and the human world alike. It reaches even the realm of enlightened sages. Whether we give or receive, we connect ourselves with all beings throughout the world. And to me, this points to that. I mean, we all know we've experienced the karma of giving. You know, whether we give, have the opportunity to give something, and this is, you know, this is like kind of pure no strings attached giving, you know, of support, of time, of resources, kindness, patience, understanding, food, space. You know, whether we have the opportunity to give or somebody just gives to us, it just softens our heart of both giver and receiver. It starts melting away that delusion of separateness and just increases the amount of good and joy in the world. And even simply witnessing giving, even if you're not involved in the giver or receiver, just witnessing giving brings some of this about. And then the phrase about this reaches even to the realm of sages. So the idea is that the sages aren't needy anymore. So this is not dependent on the neediness of the receiver. And actually it's said in Buddhism that the most merit is benefited from giving to the Sangha, to the monks who will carry on the Dharma. Which in a way they're the ones in the least, you know, material need of it, but it's about the state of your heart. So it's not dependent on the neediness of the receiver. So it's like this power of giving is like a natural law. It creates connection, or actually I think probably more accurately, it reveals the connection that's already there, reveals and manifests the connection that ordinarily we're just, you know, too you know, wrapped up in ourselves or defensive or whatever to recognize. So I'll leave it there. Any thoughts about giving? Kind of blows the mind. I mean, as the, you know, if that giving was simple, but it.
If you have one, yeah. Leading into the next part, which has to do with speech and kind speech and compassionate speech. When someone asks you to give something that you're not able to give, I think then you transition to that second part. And how to compassionately say, you know, I feel empathy for you, but I'm not really able to give you what you need or feel that you need, you know. You know, if somebody asks money of you that you don't have or something of that sort.
Well, and then the line that I didn't read at the very end was, each of these four methods of guidance includes all four. Hmm. Thus, there are 16 methods.
Right.
Because in a way, to take that time to give the kind speech is giving.
Right, exactly.
And giving is beneficial action. It's, you know, it all kind of interpenetrates. To take
right.
A little bit different form, but to be honest and still try to maintain that connection, even though you can't respond.
Yeah. Thank you.
And in terms of just the leaving the, because then, you know, there's leaving the way, and when treasure is left just as a treasure, treasure becomes giving. So this is one of those, I'm not saying this is what Dogen meant, but when I sat with this for a little bit and said, what do I think he means? And how would I put it in my own words? How would I translate it to myself? I guess I thought of all the, you know, treasures in my life, all the wonderful, you know, sukha and my home and my husband and my friends and my sangha and all these treasures. What is it when a treasure is left just as a treasure? And I kind of had this sense of, like, how do I recognize these things as treasures, kind of without embroiling myself in them, without it being about me? I want to hold on to these treasures, I want to get more of these treasures, or maybe there's some treasures I don't have and I really like. So, but kind of leaving them just to be unto themselves without this self-filter involved, my self-agenda involved. And then when I leave them just themselves in that way, what arises is just appreciation. It's just open-hearted gratitude and a sense of kind of abundance. And then it seems like in that open-hearted place, that non-self-absorbed place, I would just spontaneously share those treasures. If I encounter a being that would enjoy them, would benefit from them, be just like, hey, you know. So it would seem like it would just, giving would flow very spontaneously if we had that sense of appreciation and gratitude for our treasures. So, you know, I mean, I'm sure there's other dimensions to that sentence, and Dogen may have had something else in mind, and yet that's what kind of started to, you know, appeared for me when I explored it. So I'm sorry to kind of, like, I don't know, it feels kind of incomplete, but I figured I just wanted to introduce this essay to you because it just is so, so sweet, and I think should be so central to our practice. And you're definitely welcome to take this home and peruse it. And let's see, we have Rinzon will be speaking next weekend. And then I think it's the weekend after that, it'll be Shintai. But, you know, at some point we can return to this and delve more deeply into the other aspects of the four embracing actions.
Did you have other translations there? Is there another translation for identity action?
Yes. There are actually lots of translations of this particular essay, I think, because it's so short and sweet. So this is Nishijima Cross. And you can just kind of, if you just typed in Bodhisattva Shishobo, or Dogen Bodhisattva's Four Methods of Guidance, in the internet, you'll see. And actually, so I did this last week's podcast episode on this, and it has some links to different translations. Because let's see, these guys translate as cooperation.
It's easier for me to understand.
I don't, identity action, I don't know. But cooperation doesn't seem quite intimate enough. Mm-hmm. So I like sharing the same aim or being in the same boat.
Okay.
That's what it means, you know, like, it may be kind of an awkward thing to use a whole phrase to convey it, but it's being in the same boat with other beings.
That's very helpful.
Which is like, when I think about, you know, this is what I, you know, want to be like, come on, U.S. government, we're in the same boat with all beings. Mm. This is why we want to greet migrants compassionately at our border, because, you know, we're all in the same boat. Just because I'm an American doesn't mean I'm in a different boat. So, All right. Let me just end for the first time. Remember to end formally.
You guys are going to join and chant in a moment. Biding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all Arhats,
Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom,
Maha.